Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
You have year-end goals. Constant Contact has what it takes to help you meet them faster. Sell more, raise more, and build real relationships with your audience with Constant Contact's digital marketing tools, all made to fast-track your success. Put the go in your 2024 goals with email, social, SMS, and customized marketing campaigns built for you in just a few clicks. Ready, set, go to ConstantContact.com and start your free trial today. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allowed 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
97.1 FM Talk.
On demand audio.
Well, I love Fleetwood Mac, and it makes a great bumper. This one does in particular all the time. But there's some connection to the Fleetwood Mac that we're going to talk about here this afternoon. Movie-wise, we welcome to the show. Back on this Friday afternoon, Tim Sommer, music journalist, former record executive. He contributes to the Rock and Roll Globe website. He was the original guy that signed Hootie and the Blowfish. And along those lines, Mr. Sommer, how are you this afternoon?
I'm doing wonderful. It's great to hear your voice. It's great to be back on the show. And happy Friday, and I hope you have a wonderful week off next week.
I am very much looking forward to it. And my kids, as you know, will be in town, and my new grandson. But you just got a pretty nice honor that I know that we had kind of traded some messages on about that little, I mean, it hardly sold any copies, Cracked Rear View, right?
Yeah, that's right. I received, I don't know how to describe it. It's not a platinum record. It's an object, sort of like a glass pyramid. Let's describe.
Yeah,
it
that's
that
a
way.
Good description, right?
That commemorates the fact that Hootie and the Blowfish's Cracked Rear View has been designated a double diamond record. Now, a double diamond record means that it's sold over 20 million copies. There are only 13 double diamond albums in history, and one of them is Cracked Rear View by Hootie and the Blowfish. And as you know, but your listeners may not, I used to work for a record company. And when I worked for that record company, Atlantic Records, I was an A&R person, and I signed Hootie and the Blowfish to Atlantic Records, and I helped them make Cracked Rear View. It was an underdog project that no one expected would do anything. In fact, there were such low expectations that the record label tried to jettison the band before the album was even finished. They said that the album wasn't worth releasing, and I fought for that and had an interesting ride with Hootie, and the record went on to be the record that Atlantic had wanted not to release, in which I put my foot down. I said, hey, if you do one thing for me, release this record. Ended up being the biggest selling album
That's
in
amazing.
Atlantic Records history.
By the way, Tim wrote a great book on this called Only Want to Be With You, The Inside Story of Hootie and the Blowfish, and you can check that out. That came out, was it last year or was it 2 years ago now?
It was about 2 years ago, and thank you very much for the plug. Though it was out, it is out in paperback now, only for about 6 months. So you can get it in paperback now. Only Want to Be With You, The Inside Story of Hootie and the Blowfish, by me, Tim Sommer.
Did you say that there were only 13 of those double diamond? Just 13?
Wow. Wow, Tim.
Yeah, that's
crazy.
Yeah,
there are 13 double diamond albums in history. There are no triple diamond, which means that nothing in history has sold. No one album has sold over 30 million records. Of course, there are bands like the Beatles, like Fleetwood Mac, who culminatively sold 50, 60, 70 million records. But we're talking about single albums. No single album in history has sold over 30 million, and there are 13 that have sold over 20 million, one of those, Hootie and the Blowfish. And as I said last week, even though I haven't gotten any gold records or platinum records from the band in 25 years, I was very happy to receive this object in the mail commemorating this extraordinary achievement.
But what would be the modern-day comparison to Double Diamond or even platinum and, you know, gold? Because we do this differently with streaming now.
There is no comparison.
Right.
There is no comparison. I think that entire era is gone. I don't say that as a good thing or a bad thing. In fact, it's probably a good thing because I love the fact that streaming has made music so available, so readily available. You can hear anything you want to hear, no matter how obscure. You can pretty much just dial it up on your computer or your phone, and that's fantastic. But the art of reaching into your pocket, taking out your wallet, going to the record store, actually getting into your car or getting into your parents' car or borrowing your parents' car or borrowing your friend's parents' car and going to the record store, walking, browsing, finding the record you want, taking that record to the counter, saying, here is my $7.99, $8.99. I want that record. Man, do you remember that feeling? Do you remember that?
I loved it.
That
and it was
art of selection.
It was
art of selection.
1980,
that
it was
art.
This time of year, and I was a depressed kid. I just moved here in 1979, and my dad said, let's go to the record. So it was Peach's record on Manchester Road. So,
oh, yeah.
And I'm a thinking man, Tim. I think you appreciate that at this point. He says, any record you want. Well, of course, I'm going to hit him up for a double record, right? So I got The River by Bruce Springsteen, and I had never had a Springsteen record before. But that was my first one. I knew a little of the music from when I was in Chicago. I listened to WLUP, which was the station here. Casey was a little bit more, there was more Southern rock when I moved here to St. Louis, but he was starting to, you know, get a little bit bigger before Born in the USA. But that was, it was special to go and to look forward to that, to come into your room, to open the record, to look at the lyrics, to pop it on the turntable. That's just not replicated. Look, I'm a big fan of digital music, but you can't replicate that.
And I think a big difference is, you remember that art of selection gave you and your friends an identity. You were making a choice that said something about you when you took that money out of your pocket to buy a record. You said, this is who I am. This is the way I want my friends to know me. I'm going to take this album, and my friends are going to know me because they know that I am a Bruce Springsteen fan. They know that I am a David Bowie fan. They know that I am a Yes fan. They know that I'm a Pink Floyd fan. Because you made that selection. Now, that's largely gone now. And again, I'm all for the digital age. Again, it's made music something that even the most obscure, wonderful, strange music, for instance, you know, you can just think of anything you want, and it's there. And that's a great thing. But what we have lost is that sense of identity. That sense, you know, this is a good way to put it. I think you're going to know exactly what I'm talking about. Finding your peer group because of the music you loved. I think that's gone.
Mm. Probably is. Yeah. You know, I'd have to think through that one just a little bit. There are
Of course, there's the entire nation of Swifties, and that's fantastic. But think on a small scale level, you know, that idea that you only had 50 or 75 or 125 records in your collection. Each one of them had to say something about you. And when your friends came over, this is when you were in, you know, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th grade. When your friends came over, they would look through those records and they would think, or you would think, these records say something about me, and I want you to know that about me.
I have a friend from when I was, you know, I probably met him when I was 12 years old. His name is Greg Kruzek. He's up in the suburbs of Chicago. And a few years ago, he called me, and he gave me credit for his being a fan of The Police, because he said that I didn't even remember this, but, you know, I guess I bought that record, one of the first records, and was into that. And he remembered that from, you know, 45 years ago, which I thought was interesting. I didn't know I had influence. I thought I only had influence on the radio when I played music, but I thought that was kind of interesting. Hey, we bumped in with Fleetwood Mac. Let's talk about this, because this is, I'm excited about this. I'm a fan of the band. There's lots of drama in this band. Unfortunately, we've lost a member, and then we also have, you know, Stevie and Lindsay hating one another. But this is a project that's on Apple TV Plus that's going to come out soon, and I'm quite curious about it. Your thoughts?
I'll tell you something interesting about Fleetwood Mac, very interesting about Fleetwood Mac. When you begin to study Fleetwood Mac, it's like discovering that your father had a family before he married your mother. And I'll tell you what I mean about
because
that.
Of the earlier records?
Wait, tell, oh,
well,
yeah.
Because of the earlier right. records, right?
Between 1967 and 1970, Fleetwood Mac, who were led at that time by a guitar player named Peter Green.
That's right.
Who formed the band. Fleetwood Mac were the most powerful white blues band in history. Not only that, they kind of invented heavy metal with songs like Oh Well or The Green Manalishi. They invented heavy metal. They were a tough, angry, just snarling, authentic blues band, in my opinion, better than the Rolling Stones, much better than what Eric Clapton was doing. Peter Green, in my opinion, and Peter Green, who was in Fleetwood Mac from 1967 to about 1970, and was the leader of the band from 1967 to 1970, Peter Green was the best white electric blues player in rock history. Now, most of the people who know Fleetwood Mac from Rumors or from Tusk or from anything in the Stevie Lindsey era don't necessarily know about their prior history as a blues band. So that's what I mean.
Yeah, no, I agree. Well, because that, you know, you got Peter Green, then you got Bob Welch for a few years as well.
That's right. And not only that, between Peter Green leaving the band in 1970 and Buckingham and Nicks joining, I think in 1975, though it might be 1976, you have another extraordinary band featuring Bob Welch and an amazing, vastly underrated singer-songwriter named Danny Kirwan, with a K. Danny Kirwan is this extraordinary, exotic, sensitive singer-songwriter, and the records that he made with Fleetwood Mac, specifically a record called Bare Trees, is one of Fleetwood Mac's best records. In fact, if you had to put a gun to my head, I would say that my two favorite Fleetwood Mac records are Bare Trees and Tusk. So you have this era of Fleetwood Mac where they're this extraordinary blues band, then they become this sort of sensitive, arty, pop blues band between 1970 and 1975. Then Buckingham Nicks joins, and that becomes the Fleetwood Mac that becomes a gigantic commercial force. Now, the story doesn't end there. How many people know this? In 1995... That's not that long ago. In 1995, Fleetwood Mac released an album called Time that didn't even make it into the top 200. It's the only Fleetwood Mac record that did not chart.
Really?
Because Fleetwood Mac at that point, they were, John McVie and Mick Fleetwood, the greatest rhythm section in history, by the way, and I'm not saying that lightly. I really mean that. Mick Fleetwood on drums, John McVie on bass are the best rhythm section in history. And as much as we want to praise Stevie Nicks, as much as we want to praise Lindsey Buckingham, as much as we want to say wonderful things about the amazing Christine McVie, who I think was my all-time favorite member of Fleetwood Mac, as much as we want to say that, the fact is McVie and Fleetwood were the best bassist and drummer in a band in rock history. So anyway, where was I? I was going in 1995. McVie and Fleetwood are still in the band. And at that point, their singers were Dave Mason and Bonnie Bramlett. And they made a record no one paid any attention to.
You're telling me that Dave Mason was singing with them in 1995?
What?
See, I did not know that at all.
Yeah.
That's fat. Now, so I would take you to 2003. And this is probably, I'd be curious to see what the hardcore Fleetwood...
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Max fans would say they put a record out in 2003 called Say You Will, which I thought was a fantastic record. Still one of my favorite Fleetwood Mac, and it's really kind of underrated when it comes to what they did in their catalog. Yeah.
Tim, is the one that you're talking about, what'd you say, it's called Time. Is that one good? Have you listened? Do you like it? What is your opinion?
It's not bad. the fact is, anything with a, I'll be honest, anything with John McVie and Mick Fleetwood on it is worth listening to. That's how good they are. My whole point here being that of all of the bands, and I mean this, I don't think there's a band that has a more complicated, diverse, interesting history. Now, of course, I haven't seen this documentary yet. I hope they go into all that. I hope it's not just one big Buckingham Nicks love fest.
Yeah, and I do too, and I don't know. It's Frank Marshall.
An interesting history.
It's the Spielberg people. It's Frank Marshall, Kathleen Kennedy that are doing this. So this is a big, big, you know, project. They don't have a release date. They basically just announced it, and they said that Frank Marshall is directing. So, you know, big names connected with this. You know it's going to be slick. But yeah, they got to get into some of the dissension amongst the ranks, right?
And I'm going to tell you a very interesting story. Think to yourself, why is a band called Fleetwood Mac? Because in 1967, Peter Green, who was already a very well-known guitarist in England, he was already known, had this enormous reputation as a blues guitarist, having originally played with John Mayall's Blues Breakers. In fact, he succeeded Eric Clapton in John Mayall's Blues Breakers. Peter Green had such a weird attitude about his own ego that people are saying, okay, Peter Green, put together your own band, call it the Peter Green Band. He said, no, I'm not going to do that. I don't want to call it the Peter Green Band. In fact, I'll just name it after the bass player. I'll call it Fleetwood Mac. You know, Fleetwood being a famous car, Mac being for McVie. He wouldn't even allow the band, his band, to have his name. That's how strange Peter Green was. And Peter Green, in fact, famously, Peter Green kind of had a lot of mental issues. That's what caused him to leave the band in 1970. Peter Green famously once pulled a gun on his accountant.
I know that story. Yeah, I've heard that story.
He didn't want to get royalties anymore. He didn't think he deserved money for his music.
Yeah, he had some issues. There's no doubt. By the way, just a quick trivia question. I think you're going to be able to answer this.
You know what? If you want to take away one thing from this, I want your listeners to listen to either one of two songs, The Green Man Alishi or Oh Well, both of which from the Peter Green era of Fleetwood Mac with Peter Green singing and playing guitar, and tell me those songs just don't knock your socks off and have your sneakers fly off your feet with it.
I do love Oh Well. There was a band in the late 70s that covered that, and I loved the cover of it. Do you remember anybody that did that?
A lot of people covered it.
But hey, here's another, before I let you go here, trivia question. Bob Welch trivia question. What was the name of his first solo record, 1976? You remember that one?
Ooh.
Had an interesting cover, French Kiss. Remember that?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And you know that Fleetwood Mac recorded the original version of, why am I blanking on the name of his big songs? That really big song of his.
Bob Welch's big hit? Well,
yeah.
he had Ebony Eyes, and he had, what was the other one that he had? There were a couple of them. Sentimental Lady was one.
Sentimental Lady.
Yeah.
The Fleetwood Mac version of Sentimental Lady is just dynamite.
I'll have to check that out. He did Goldust Woman,
too. It's a whole huge history, and all I'm saying is, I hope, again, the story of Fleetwood Mac is like finding out, wait, Dad, what's this family you have that you never told us about?
Well, I can't wait for this movie. Again, I don't think they're even close to release date. They just announced the project. Tim, as so often is the case with you, we always want more time, but I gotta wrap here because I'm up against the clock. But look, thank you so much for jumping on here. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Always a pleasure.
We know you're big fans and vice versa. I appreciate it.
Get more at 971talk.com.